From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made February 28, 1978, on an episode of Happy Days. The alien Mork first appeared, and eventually the Fonz would offer his skills in helping Mork with women. The character was not necessarily meant to be a recurring one, but the audience demand brought Mork back, and eventually Mork with his own show, Mork and Mindy. That was the launching pad for a young actor named Robin Williams, and I don't have to tell you about his career. And I also don't have to tell you that we lost him yesterday, lost him to suicide. So this hour, we're going to look back on the career of Robin Williams, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the issues surrounding his loss. Still a lot to learn about that, but I think it has a lot of us thinking about people in our own life, and I think there's always a lot to learn from that. In a second, you're going to hear from film critic Jack Garner. Also glad to have Mike DiGiorgio here. Mike is the executive producer of 13 Wham News This Morning and a film critic in his own right. Mike, nice to see you.
Evan, thanks for thinking of me today.
And Shai Lewis is here. She's a program manager with 211 Lifeline. Shai, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
A little bit about what you do, Shai. Tell our audience.
211 Lifeline is our local crisis and information hotline. We serve Monroe, Wayne, Livingston, Ontario, Cayuga County. We're open 24 hours to talk to people about crisis situations, mental health, suicide, and information about community services. So everything from food pantries to mental health services, we're there to serve that need in the community.
Next month, there is a week that's, I think it's Suicide Prevention Awareness Week, and we're going to be, and we had planned a while back, and we're still going to devote an hour of this program next month to that, because you really can't talk enough about depression and suicide. But I imagine what happened yesterday had a lot of people talking in your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've all been talking about it, some of the online communities and on social media and amongst ourselves. It affects us. You can work in the field of suicide prevention, but you're still affected personally. I was surprised how personally affected I felt, having grown up in the 70s and 80s and followed the career and have introduced my own daughter to Robin Williams movies about how affected we all are. We're affected by a loss, and a loss this big is going to affect a lot of people.
I have asked people all day long, what do you first think of when you think of Robin Williams? And depending on what decade you were born in, I've run into people today who said, oh, I loved him in Mrs. Doubtfire. And I said, what about Mork and Mindy? And they say, I never heard of that. You know, it's amazing. But Mike DiGiorgio in 1970, I don't know when Mork and Mindy debuted, not 78 or 79,
yeah,
as a show, 60 million people a week watch that show.
I was a kid and I remember it well. I remember him on Happy Days. I remember quoting the first episode of Mork and Mindy nonstop. I had one of the first t-shirts I ever owned that said Shazbot. It was the thing we were talking about in fifth grade, this show.
Shazbot. Yeah, Shazbot. Nanu. Yeah. Had his own language there. And it was, again, top television back then. You don't get 60 million a week now. What, if you're a strong show now,
oh,
you get,
gosh,
how much? 15, 20 million?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're lucky, you get that.
Yeah, so 60 million people a week. And so the first clip I want to play, by the way, is an ominous, really just, Mike DiGiorgio sent me a clip this morning from Mork and Mindy. Now, Mork would do kind of talkbacks with his, Mike, do you want to help set this up? He would kind of do talkbacks with his home planet.
Yeah, the idea, he'd learn a little lesson through the course of the episode, and then he would send, you know, through his brain a message to Orson, his superior, and it'd be a bit of a monologue, you know, about what he had learned that week and put everything into a little perspective. This episode, Mork met the comedian Robin Williams and talked about the trappings of fame and sent this report back to Orson.
So let's listen, and listen now with the loss of Robin Williams. This is 1979, Robin Williams as Mork talking about the dangers of fame.
This week, sir, I learned what it's like to be famous on Earth.
That's good.
Well, sir, sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. You see, most Earthlings try very hard to be recognized for what they do, but when they become stars, sir, they realize they're recognized wherever they go.
You mean they lose their privacy?
Well, sir, sometimes they can even lose their clothes. You see, being a star, sir, is a 24-hour job, and you can't leave your face at the office.
Isn't fame its own reward?
Well, yes, sir, it is, but when you're a celebrity, everybody wants a piece of you, sir. Unless you can say no, there'll be no pieces left for yourself.
I thought all stars were rich, live in mansions, and drive big eggs.
I know, sir, that's the common misconception. But you see, to get that, you have to pay a very heavy price. You have responsibilities, anxieties, and, well, to be honest, sir, some of them can't take it.
I'm not buying it, Mork.
Why, sir?
It sounds to me like they have it made.
Well, Most of them do, sir, but some are victims of their own fame. Very special and talented people. People like Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Lenny Bruce, Freddie Prinze, and John Lennon.
If you could only see, not only hearing that, which is eerie now, if you could see his face, he looked wounded. It looked like Robin Williams, the person, was actually bleeding through the character and thinking of those losses and feeling the hurt.
This was probably 1980-81.
Okay.
It would have been soon after losing John Lennon.
Oh, okay, right. Okay.
And also he mentions there Freddie Prinze, who also took his own life. And so he was affected by it then, 1980-81.
What did you think? You sent me that clip for a reason. What did you think, Mike?
It was actually the first, I saw the clip just a couple of hours ago, and it was the first time I actually got emotional over the Robin Williams loss. I was in journalism news mode and just kind of, wow, and what does this mean, and how do we report it, and seeing what other celebrities have to say about it. And that was just a moment a couple of hours ago where I just thought, whoa, he really did struggle with something.
Shai Lewis from 2-in-1 Lifeline, when you hear, again, that's a fictional show, but he's talking about the real losses there, and now it just looks so much more painful.
It does look so much more painful in retrospect when you hear him talking about that. But it gives us a sense, even in that fictional moment, of the reality of some of these big losses and how they have an impact on the greater community. When we lose a person in our own lives to suicide, there's a ripple effect of people who that matters to and who are saddened by that. And when it's a big celebrity, someone that we're all very connected to, especially someone we're as connected to as Robin Williams, there's definitely going to be a ripple of effect of folks, you know, like us who are feeling emotional about it. And there may be some other folks who have their own thoughts of suicide who that might push this thought to the forefront. And we need to be mindful and try to reach out to those people who might become more at risk. Research does show that some folks are going to be triggered by this who are already struggling.
We're going to get more into this a little bit later this hour with Shai, the 2-in-1 Lifeline program manager, and we certainly want to hear from you if you want to weigh in on that. Now, Mike DiGiorgio, when they put an episode like that in, when they close with a monologue like that,
mm-hmm.
they know what they're saying. I mean, they're almost sending a message that fame does have its risks, and almost it almost felt like saying, hey, let's realize these are human beings too.
The show was typically, the lessons were a little more, you know, importance of friendship and family and things like that. But probably following the loss of John Lennon and the others he mentioned there, Robin Williams had to be going through something there. I can only assume he had an influence on that episode's script.
Well said there. Let's listen. Earlier this morning, I had a chance to talk to Jack Garner, longtime Rochester film critic. And Jack has spoken many times to Robin Williams. And I was always curious to know what it was like sitting down directly with Robin Williams. That's where I began my conversation with Jack Garner.
Do you remember the first time you interviewed Robin Williams?
That's a tough one. I was thinking, somebody else asked me recently what I interviewed him for. I think it could possibly have been Good Will Hunting. It might have been Moscow on the Hudson, a movie I love. It's actually my favorite of his films. It's not being mentioned much right now, but I think it's brilliant. So it was one of those early films. And it could even have been, believe it or not, Popeye, which at the time was thought to be a really big deal when he actually played Popeye. And then it was kind of a bust for some people, although it's still kind of an interesting movie. It was directed by Robert Altman, of all people. I do remember the one thing, though, when I talked to Robin, I always made sure to try to request an early segment, an early slot, because he would warm up. And by warm up, I mean he would get crazy and more manic and funny, which was great. You'd go in a room and you'd laugh your butt off, and then you'd go back to your office and you'd say, well, now what am I going to write? You know, he didn't get the answers. You just got a great comedy routine. But early on, he was much more attuned with talking about what he needed to talk about.
That's an interesting comment, because I felt last night when I thought back on his career and who he was, I've seen a lot of interviews with him over the years, but he almost invariably was that. Seems to be in character and always trying to make the interviewer laugh. It didn't help if the interviewer was kind of hammy, and a lot of interviewers were.
Yeah.
But I never felt like I really saw who the real Robin Williams was, and maybe that was part of his struggles.
Well, I think there's often talk of actors and other artists, I suppose, putting on a mask. And his was one of the more definitively, that was more definitively the case, I think, with Robin. I mean, he just really did wear a mask. And we were talking informally last night that that one of the, you know, whenever I would see him, and I would laugh a lot, and the same thing was true of his sort of his father figure in comedy, who was Jonathan Winters. When these guys would do their stuff, as much as you're laughing, there's a small little corner of yourself that, at least in my case, I was a little nervous because I wasn't quite sure where this was coming from. And there, I just suspected some sort of dark corners behind it. I just always felt that with Robin. But that also might have been one reason he was such a great dramatic actor. He could also pull on that for the dramatic side of things. And so he was one of these guys that was very versatile and could do both sides of that coin.
You said a great dramatic actor, and early in his career, especially when he breaks through as Mork, that was a wonderful vehicle for him to use some of that manic improvisation. And Good Morning Vietnam gave him a little bit more length to do that as well. But you say he really did and will be recognized as a great dramatic actor as well.
Yeah, well, he won his only Oscar for Good Will Hunting, where he plays a psychiatrist, and that's a straight role. He was straight in Dead Poets Society. Now, the comedy, he will always be and always was Robin Williams. So when he would do a straight role, there is humor in life, and even in the most dramatic circumstances, you need humor. I mean, I've always said that some of the funniest things you ever have in your life are when you go to a funeral. I mean, because people just are open to talk about stuff like that, and they sort of need that cushion. And the same thing was true of Robin, that in a dramatic role, he could also be very funny, but he always got back to the dramatic core of it. And the same thing was true of my favorite, Moscow on the Hudson. And of course, there's The World According to Garp, which was his amazing breakthrough. That was a huge film based on a best-selling novel. And he did all that. And I don't mean to make it all stuff that he did 30 years ago. I mean, the guy had a career, that where he did stuff more recently. I'm sure you and your son are sitting down to watch Aladdin every once in a while. And I can't help but think that his great comic improvisational mind fueled the role of the genies to the point that the animators had to kind of think quick on their feet to figure out how the hell they were going to animate what he was saying,
Well, you mentioned the genie. On Slate.com this morning, there's a writer who is, I think, in his late 20s who says, "The interesting thing about Robin Williams is, depending on how old you are, you think of him in very different but almost equally iconic roles. That if you were a child of the 70s, Robin Williams instantly comes to mind as Mork. If you were a child of the 80s, Good Morning Vietnam. A child of the 90s, the genie in Aladdin." Not a whole lot of actors can say that they've got that much time where they're actually sort of iconic to different generations.
And you can throw in Mrs. Doubtfire. And I mean, there's so many roles that he defined. And you're right. And I think that showed a great consistency of his abilities, of his talent. He was consistent. And he even got darker with his drama near the end. I mean, he played some psychotic characters in what was that one about the guy who did photographs?
One-hour photo, I think.
One-hour photo, and some of that stuff was really dark. He could go, he could certainly go to the dark side, but he was very versatile, and he had it for all generations. And that's kind of the sad thing. I mean, he was 63, and there was a time in my life I would have said that was a pretty good, robust life. Now that I'm beyond that myself, I'd say hell no. But I do know that we could have had more, and that's always one of the sad things. But the other thing is, I always say when people die is who are artists, who leave behind novels and paintings and music and, in his case, movies. We'll always have the movies, and so he will last long. Long beyond the memory of how he died or whatever that all is,
I was going to ask you if there are film buffs who want to kind of look back at Robin Williams' career. We know the obvious ones, but I was going to ask for a few non-obvious choices of yours. And you already mentioned one, Moscow and the Hudson.
Right, I think Moscow and the Hudson. When he plays the saxophonist in the Moscow Orchestra, he goes to the Moscow Circus, and he comes to New York, and he just chooses Bloomingdale's as the place to defect. There is obviously comedy right in saying that. But, yeah, he was very funny in that. He was Cadillac Man was a fun movie. Awakenings, where he played the psychiatrist, again, a doctor that he played. Oh, and The Fisher King. A lot of people I noticed on Facebook last night have fond memories of The Fisher King. But even in his failures, there were interesting choices. When Steven Spielberg made the live, non-animated version of Peter Pan, he called it Hook, and he chose Robin Williams to be Peter Pan, which is sort of like he was Peter Pan for a generation. So that would be one. Being Human is an interesting film. So there are throughout Jumanji, the Birdcage. I thought the remake of La Cage aux Folles, he was very good in that and tread just carefully that line between being an effeminate gay man and not going so far that it was in any way know, not good. So, yeah, I loved his work, and I haven't, in some ways, he's one of those guys I haven't thought a whole lot about in terms of his work until this happens, and then you look back and you say, holy cow.
And Jack, so much of what I read about sort of the behind-the-scenes stuff indicates that at least in some of the roles, certainly not all of them, but at least in some, they would leave gaps of pages open knowing that he was going to improvise.
I heard somebody interviewed who talked about Good Will Hunting, that there were scenes in which he would deliver a line that was different every single time. And if you're a smart director and a smart director, you allow that to happen. If you're a smart writer, you don't object if that happens. You would give him an idea or a situation, but then let his brilliant mind sparkle around it, you know, and he did that. I suppose there were times when it was a challenge for a director. You know, you got to keep the guy kind of on point. But he was also smart enough, I think, to stay on point most of the time. Although I suppose, and we may see them someday, there must be some of the most amazing outtakes in the history of movie outtakes if they ever let them go, you know?
Yeah, I would certainly think so. I was going back watching clips last night of Good Morning Vietnam, and that was such an obvious Robin Williams vehicle. But at the same time, if I'm trying to remember correctly, and it's been a while since I sat down and watched that start to finish, he added some humanity to that role, too. It wasn't just sort of a shticky character. I mean, it was a real character, I think.
Well, I think a lot of his humor and a lot of his improvs and a lot of his reading of lines that aren't improvs, there's a rich humanity to his work, and I think that's true of the really important artists. You know, we had Phil Hoffman in recent years around here, who we all know and love, and of course, we learned that the whole world knew and loved Phil Hoffman, and he had the same thing. They both brought humanity. They brought a realness because there's the sense that we're dealing here with a human being on screen and not just somebody's idea of a character trying to convey a point.
Jack, you've covered the industry for years, and unfortunately in this industry, there is a higher proportion of drug use, substance abuse, whether it's alcohol or others. I don't know why, and I don't know if you have any insight as to why this seems to be more common in this industry, but it is terribly sad.
Well, you know, there's a Robin Williams himself wrote one of the definitive jokes that explains some of it. He said, "Cocaine is God's way of telling you you're too rich," and there's some truth to that, in the sense that these people have the access, they have the money, they have people fawning all over them who are dying to give them something, whatever, you know, heroin or cocaine or something. So I think to say no and to rise above it is probably a bigger challenge for those people than it would be for the average Joe, you know, coming out of the 9-to-5 work world. So that's a large part of it, I think. And also, a lot of them have really weird hours. I mean, I think in the jazz scene, for example, I think drugs became a problem over the decades because jazz artists had to stay up till, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning, and then how do you get to sleep? So they'd take something to get to sleep and then something to get up later. And, you know, so that all these kind of things come into play for the entertainment world, and I think that's probably a large part of it.
We've essentially covered what his legacy is, but let me close by at least asking you, when you hear the name Robin Williams now, what role will come to mind first for you?
Believe it or not, I already said it, and that's Moscow on the Hudson.
That's very interesting.
I love that role. First of all, he does a great Russian accent, and he actually speaks Russian in it, and somebody wrote on Facebook last night that they talked to a Russian relative or something who said that his language, his accent was right on the money. That role to me is so memorable, but I also, there's hard to pinpoint one. I mean, I believe it or not, I think another definitive Robin Williams is the genie in Aladdin, and I love his drag thing in Mrs. Doubtfire and Good Will Hunting, all these films we've been talking about. But to me, if I had to put one film on a shelf and say, you know, this is my Robin Williams film, it would be Moscow on the Hudson.
Thank you, Jack.
Okay, no problem. Thanks.
That's film critic Jack Garner talking about Robin Williams. And here's an email from Jake that says, "I hear you talking about movies, but no mention yet of his epic stand-up specials. Mike DiGiorgio, what do you think of the stand-up?"
I remember liking them. The thing about Robin Williams is I'm having trouble remembering jokes and dialogue. I'm remembering more the experiences you get watching him and just what he does with a moment, whether it was a talk show, interview or a stand-up special, just remembering after that was really good, or he really hit that one.
Well, there's one I can give you one, and it is not suitable to play on these airwaves, so that's why I've not pulled it. But if you look up his comedic monologue on golf and the origins of the sport of golf, again, not suitable for work, but very, very funny. Here's a clip of Robin Williams that, for me, when I was growing up, this was the first. we kind of talked about what do you think about when you think of Robin Williams. This was the movie for me that came to mind first. A man behind a microphone in Vietnam.
Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early. Hey, hi, what's your name?
My name's Bob Fever.
Bob, what do you do?
I'm in artillery.
Thank you, Bob. Can we play anything for you?
Anything! Just play it loud, okay?
That's from Good Morning Vietnam. Mike, that has to be a case of them understanding that there's not a script there, right? I mean, that's him.
No, he's perfect for that. I mean, it was a real guy, and I'm sure there was some real dialogue
based on true
in
story,
there.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, but you let Robin Williams be Robin Williams. You had a microphone at that point.
And I said earlier, I thought that movie exemplified the fact that he could be that kind of manic self of his, but he could also act. How much, Mike, as a critic, do you look at his films and you say, okay, there was a little bit in Dead Poets Society of his zaniness. There mm-hmm. there was a lot of it in Good Morning in Vietnam. There was more of it here. There's more of it there. How much of that is effective for role, and how much of that did you want to make sure was kept in check?
I think he always kept these in check by the end. There was always the lesson learned.
The Full House moment?
The Full House moment, or, you know, his... Here's part of why this death, I think, is striking me, is that these funny roles of his, in the context of the movie, helped other characters, whether it was a therapist in Good Will Hunting, whether it was in Awakenings, whether it was the teacher in Dead Poets Society, even Good Morning Vietnam, he helped some people out towards the end.
Yes.
There was always something... It got reined in when it needed to at the end so that you could have that poignant moment. And you think, you know, Robin Williams is a guy who really helped people with humor.
Too much so in Patch Adams that got killed by the critics. But again, it was...
maybe too literal. It wasn't the best movie, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, okay. Well...
he didn't hit a home run every time.
But at the same time, yeah, I think that's a good point, that his own humanity seemed to be bleeding into those characters by the end of those movies. Let's listen to a clip of the second clip I want to play here. This comes from the most mentioned movie, and I've talked to maybe 30 or 40 people today. What movie stands out to you most when you hear Robin Williams? This one is what people said the most.
Euphigenia Doubtfire, dear. I specialize in the education and entertainment of children. I'm a hip old granny who could hip-hop, bebop, dance till you drop, and yo-yo make a wicked cup of cuckoo.
Did it work for you, Mike DiGiorgio?
It did work for me. And again, there was the humanity towards the end
Absolutely.
Of that movie. He's helping his kids.
Well, the whole point of the ruse is because he wants to get closer to his children, and mm-hmm. he felt like he was losing that. Shai Lewis is here, a 2-in-1 Lifeline program manager. A lot of these films we're mentioning, and the next one, by the way, you're probably, again, watching with your kids, aren't you?
I do. I've been watching a lot of Robin Williams movies. We've been watching Jumanji. I have a 5-year-old. So we have really kind of hooked into Hook.
I think he'd be proud of that, knowing yeah. that legacy, that people not only think it's fun for kids, but there's a lot of good messages there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he is someone who has brought us a lot of joy. And I think it's important as we talk about his death and the sadness surrounding it that we remember the joy and remember him as a whole person as well, who wasn't always sad, who wasn't always struggling, who was often exactly what he portrayed on screen.
Let's grab our call here. This is Mary Jane. Mary Jane, thanks for calling.
Yes, just as I was calling in, you mentioned Dead Poets Society. It doesn't get as much mention the last couple of days as so many of us other things that were funny, but that was one of my favorite movies. I've watched it many times. And it reminded me of school teachers that I had at 36 School in Rochester and mm-hmm. Benjamin Franklin, who taught not only the subject, but they talked about life. And his Carpe Diem, Seize the Day, has been a strong emphasis in my life. And I'm 92 now.
Oh, Mary Jane, well, thank you for sharing the story. Great story. And in fact... Mary Jane, I will tell you that you may not be on Twitter, but Mike DiGiorgio was telling me that what was trending on Twitter?
Captain, my captain. People were just sending that out as a tribute last night, absolutely.
So it's a reference to Dead Poets Society.
The Seize the Day speech as well.
Yeah, so Mary Jane, you'll be glad to know that as we look in his career works, Dead Poets Society may not get the first mention, but it's certainly respected as a choice there. Here's another one. Here's a clip of a movie that not only did I think he was fabulous in this film, but I'm going to ask Mike when we come out of this clip if he changed the way they animate movies to the point where it almost had to be a big name doing voices. This is the genie from Aladdin.
Aye! 10,000 years will give you such a crick in the neck. Hang on a second. Whoa! Wow! Does it feel good to be out of there? I'm telling you, nice to be back, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, where are you from? What's your name?
Aladdin.
Aladdin! Hello, Aladdin. Nice to have you on the show. Can we call you Al? Or maybe just Din? Or how about Laddie? Sounds like, here, boy. Come on, Laddie. Say, you're a lot smaller than my last master. Either that or I'm getting bigger. Look at me from the side. Do I look different to you?
There's, again, got to be extemporaneous riffing there.
Yeah, and what a great opportunity to take Robin Williams to the next level, if you think about it. When they had that opportunity to take that energy and animate it, of course they went nuts with it. I'm hard-pressed to think of who Aladdin, I mean, he stole the movie as a voice.
Robin Williams said that the genie did.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I can't think of
who did
who
Aladdin?
Else was in Aladdin.
I have
I'm
idea.
Sure it'll hit me later. But
Mike, did that almost force the hand of studios to hire big names for animated productions?
I bet. I'd have to look at a timeline. But yeah, now once we get into the Pixar movie soon after that, then you got your Tom Hanks and everybody else in those.
All right, we're gonna take a break in a second. What I want to do is, if you want to talk about Robin Williams and his career, we can do that. I also want to spend the second half of this program, especially talking to Shai Lewis, a 211 Lifeline program manager, about suicide and about suicide prevention and about what we all should think about. I mean, every person's different, and you know, we're not sitting here saying that anybody should have done anything different. There's a lot we don't know when it comes to Robin Williams, but we're going to be talking about that. So the number, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Mike, you didn't answer that question. The first film for you, the first film for you when you hear Robin Williams' name?
First film?
Or first role? First thing you think of is Robin Williams.
Because I was a kid, I think Mork and Mindy.
You think Mork.
For film, though, I think Good Morning Vietnam.
But Mork is the answer.
Mork is the answer.
Yeah, and the funny thing now is you can go back and watch just about every episode of Mork and Mindy online. And I don't remember, I mean, I remember watching it a little bit growing up, or probably reruns, but it started out a lot hotter. I think, it's, from what I'm reading, Mike, they tinkered pretty quickly and they made some mistakes.
They struggled season. Towards the end when they added, ironically, his idol, Jonathan Winters, as his son in a whole weird alien thing. That was the attempt to try to get something back. But yeah, they knew it was over.
All right, let's take the shortest break in radio. I see Dave Campo, our engineer, dealing with a bunch of phone calls, which is great. Stay there. If you're on the phone, stay there. I've got Mike DiGiorgio, a film critic and the executive producer of 13 WHAM News This Morning, in studio with us. Shai Lewis is here, 2-in-1 Lifeline program manager, as we look at the life and the loss of Robin Williams. I'm Evan Dawson. This is member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we welcome a man who knows something about the risks of politics. Jeff Smith was incarcerated 5 years ago after he admitted it's easy to become blinded for power when you're in office. He wrote a piece about Governor Cuomo for Politico, and he will explain why the governor could have legitimate legal troubles ahead. That's Wednesday on The Next Connections.
Opening this week at the Little Theater, The 100-Foot Journey, starring Helen Mirren, is definitely not a film to see on an empty stomach. Displaced from their native India, the Kadam family moves to a quaint and picturesque village in the south of France, but they clash with Madame Mallory, owner of a celebrated French restaurant, after they open their own eatery, until a special and undeniable chemistry causes Madame to take gifted young chef Hassan under her wing. See details at thelittle.org.
All right, welcome back to Connections. Let's get right to the phones. This is Brian in Rochester. Brian, thanks for calling. Are you there, Brian?
This is Craig, if you can hear me.
Oh, I've got it backwards. I do. You know what? This was the host's fault. The numbers are written correctly. I read them incorrectly. Craig in Rochester. Thank you for calling, Craig.
Yeah, I'm calling. I've met Robin several times on working in Los Angeles in improv, and I just wanted to say he was one of these guys. But Norman, I haven't heard you talk about. He was a trained actor from Juilliard. That was his background. He can be very, very focused. One of the nicest things he had said, he had been doing a concert at Universal Studios Amphitheater, you know, thousands of people, exhausted, had not been feeling well all week, came in to the improv at, I don't know, 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, pretty much hoarse, came over to Second City where we were doing a show, and afterwards he sent his friend Dean Haglund to meet me in the parking lot and come back and chat, and one of the older guys doing stuff, he said, you know, in a very hoarse voice, some of the best advice I've ever gotten, which was, don't judge yourself. Don't censor yourself. That's the audience's job. And go big. And he thought I was great and was just very encouraging. Anytime he came in, he was encouraging and very focused. So he could turn off that manic and actually be very much be with you. He was very kind about it.
I'm glad to hear that, Craig. And let me ask Mike, did you ever have a chance to meet Robin Williams?
No.
One of the comments I made earlier, and Craig is helping us see that this is not necessarily true, and I'm glad to hear that, is that I didn't see very much of him kind of toning down. A lot of the interviews, he was still kind of in character.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, if you go back, find an interview from 2006 that Terry Gross did with him for Fresh Air. Absolutely worth listening to, and in that interview, he tones back a little bit. But, Craig, that's very special and very, you know, I'm sure for you, a great piece to hold on to.
Yeah, it is, and he will be very much missed, I'm sure, by all of his friends in the community and by the public at large for that unique gift that he brought. But yeah, he was someone who just really had that ability to be with you. But he only did that in, I think, really private, closed circumstances. Other than that, you're right, he was on. So,
yeah, Craig, thanks for the call. Great call. And I don't want Shy Lewis to feel like you have to psychoanalyze a man. I mean, nobody really knows exactly a person's demons. In that 2006 interview with Terry Gross on Fresh Air, Robin Williams talked about depression and comedians. And he said, again, this is 8 years ago, that a lot of comedians have to go to dark places to get material, to look in their own lives or look around society, and sometimes they go to dark places, and that's part of the job. But she asked him, what about you, though, about depression? And he said, I'm not clinically depressed. He said, do I feel sad sometimes? In his words, he said, I feel bummed out, well, sometimes when I look around the world. Do I get really sad? Yes. Do I have a good cry? Yes. But I'm not clinically depressed. I look back now. His publicist said yesterday he was dealing with, I think her words, severe depression. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he was in denial 8 years ago. I've had friends and family with depression. There are times where you think I don't need meds or I can handle it. I don't know where I'm going with this other than to say that interview now 8 years ago, I'm even more sad about because he was almost saying, you know, look, I'm good. We all get sad. I'm good, you know?
Mm-hmm. I can't, of course, speak for Mr. Williams,
absolutely.
But what I would assume and what we see sometimes is that there's a distinction for folks between, and there's still so much stigma associated with mental health. I think he may have been trying to dissociate the difference between a diagnosis of depression and I get bummed out. And I think he was very forthright in acknowledging that he struggled with being sad sometimes. He struggled with feeling really bummed out. He was very open that he struggled with addiction at different points in his lifetime. Not so long ago, in 2006, he started drinking again and things like that. So I think this is an important opportunity for us to all think about mental health and addiction and what we can learn about that, what we can learn about suicide risk, how we could be helpful to somebody else.
Before I get back to the phones, on that point, let's say you have someone in your life who's dealt with addiction and dealt with it pretty well. Sometimes the tendency is to think, oh, they're clean now. They're good. It's easy. Mm-hmm. And I think we all sort of have to continue to be aware of what people may need and to be present for people, right?
And that really is the key, is being present for people, being connected, knowing your friends, family, loved ones, looking for what we like to call invitations to talk potentially about additional risk, about suicide. Sometimes people put up like red flags that maybe are really big billboards, you know, big waving flags that you should talk to them that something's wrong. And sometimes they're more subtle and only friends, family, people who are close to you might notice them. But sometimes we're afraid to talk about them. We feel that we're not equipped. We feel that maybe we will cause more harm. And I would like to encourage people to take the risk. If we are present, we are not going to cause harm. If we open the door to a dialogue, we are not going to cause harm. So it's really important to look at those signs, things that you're worried about, and ask directly, hey, what's going on for you here? I see X, I see you doing this, or I see this behavior and I'm really concerned about it. And to ask about it, and to ask if the person has had thoughts of suicide. You do not put the idea in someone's head by asking the question.
That is the single most common concern that we always hear, is people feel like, if I bring it up, that either it's going to be uncomfortable, or they're going to be angry, or it's going to put the idea in their head.
It's the fastest way to find out if they're not thinking about suicide, and it's the safest way to open the door. Evidence really does show that there's no harm has been found in asking the question, and evidence does show that there's lots of good that can come from normalizing, talking about it. Research shows about 1 in 20 people in any given year think about suicide. Thinking about suicide is pretty normal when you're going through difficult situations, struggling with something, whether it's a mental health condition, a physical health condition. What we want to make sure is that we also recognize that most people don't act on that. And as we talk about suicide, and as we talk about the aftermath of Robin Williams' death, to remember that all around you there are people who are fighting that fight right now and winning and staying alive every day. And we want to be respectful as we talk about suicide for those people, as well as for those who've lost a loved one.
All right, this is Brian in Rochester. Go ahead, Brian. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hello, Evan Shai. Thank you for sharing this topic today. I think Robin Williams' genius in his comedy came because he was in touch with the depths of human experience. He was... You know, he pointed out the folly of our human condition and the serious side of it, and that's what made us laugh. Yet my experience secondhand of Robin came from a time when I was in grad school, not only human, but humanitarian. A dear friend that I met while in my second year of grad school in St. Louis had been struggling with being HIV positive, and he had written to Robin at that time, and in the midst of his illness, Robin spoke to him, flew him out for a weekend, talked with him. He identified with people that felt isolated and were going through great struggles, and yet could bring so much joy, and that will be sorely missed.
I think that's beautifully said, and I'm glad to keep hearing these stories, Brian, that he did have many of those human interactions. Sometimes we in the media expect him to sit down in an interview. I mean, you know, Mike, let's say he does a satellite interview with somebody and you think,
sure.
Oh, pour your guts out. I want to see the real you, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he's promoting mm-hmm. Jumanji and,
right.
and he gives you a bit of a zany interview. We shouldn't be surprised at that, right?
No, Mike? We shouldn't. And you know, at the same time, I don't think I'm going through my memory. I'm not remembering bad stories about Robin Williams.
No,
this is not a guy who ever hurt anybody that I can think of.
No, I don't think so. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. More just I was so fascinated by him
mm-hmm.
that I wanted to know sort of what made him tick and what created this ability and
what caused this.
Yeah, and so we didn't see it much, but Craig and Brian have related some stories that really give you a little bit more of that from him. But yeah, I don't remember any big feuds, any...
Another story I think of, the caller before mentioned Juilliard. He went to Juilliard with Christopher Reeve, and late in Christopher Reeve's life, he was there for him. There are stories of him going to the hospital and surprising him in costumes and things like that.
Wow.
That he was just intensely loyal to his friends like that.
All right, let's get Bill and Webster. Bill and Webster, thanks for calling Connections.
Oh, you're welcome. Last night I was listening to a panel show on Dr. Drew, and they were saying that Robin Williams had suffered some significant heart disease and some surgery, and they were just making the point that, and I know this has happened in my life, when you're facing a medical crisis, I had serious medical issue in my time, and I wound up becoming pretty significantly depressed about it, so they had said that maybe that was tied, and maybe the psychiatrist on the show there was saying that often depression is tied to that medical illnesses.
I'm really glad you bring this up, Bill. Let me hit 2 points. First of all, Shai, he mentioned psychiatrist. Well, tell us again, for those just joining us, she is a Lifeline program manager, 211 Lifeline.
Mm-hmm. We're the local suicide hotline. And I would agree with what the caller said in terms of what happened on Dr. Drew's show, thinking about the fact that medical illness can be a significant trigger for feelings of depression and feelings of depression, are often a precursor to thoughts of suicide. Obviously, not everyone who experiences that has thoughts about suicide, but certainly those things are tied together. There's, you know, that whole mind-body connection really does play a role.
I talked to a woman this morning who said, don't lose sight of the fact that Robin Williams had open heart surgery 5 years ago. And she said, my husband had the same surgery. And I can tell you that one thing that we were not prepared for, and no one told us to get ready for, was that often depression comes after these major surgeries. And it happened to her husband, mm-hmm. and she wasn't surprised to see Robin Williams struggling with depression. Again, we're not diagnosing that was the cause. There's so much we don't know. But it's a good thing to keep in mind, just to let people know, you're certainly not alone if you've gone through that. I mean, and Bill, I think that's part of the point, right?
Yeah, it happened to me. I got over it, of course, but it does definitely seem they were related, no doubt.
Well, thanks for the call and for keeping our eyes on that. And just another good reminder, Shai, that check up on people. Make sure, I mean, I've had people in my life have gone through major surgeries. And mm-hmm. sometimes we think, hey, they had a major surgery and it went well. So therefore, they're going to be happy. You know, that's mm-hmm. another thing. Little maintenance, I guess.
Yeah, checking in with people when there's times of loss, losing a job, losing a loved one. Those are often triggers for people. Again, of course, the majority of us are able to deal with our depression, deal with our losses, deal with struggles in a different way. But for some people, suicide becomes a real option as a way to end their pain. And most people who are thinking about suicide aren't really wanting to die so much as that they're wanting their pain to end. And so it's really important for us as caregivers and people who are looking at our relationships in the community to try to reach out to people who might be in pain. And for people who are in pain to know that they're not alone, but you feel so alone. It's hard to break through that.
Let's get Aaron in Rochester. Aaron, thanks for calling Connections. Hi, Aaron. Are you there, Aaron?
Hello.
Go ahead.
I'm late to the show here. I just turned it on driving home. But I have a comment that I want to make about I come from a family of people with scalping depression. I think it's common to Irish people. But The thing that...
We lost Erin there for a moment. Let's see if she comes back there. Hey, Erin, if you're listening, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and knock that call out because I don't want her to flicker back out. Erin, call back, please. Dave, our engineer, will be ready for you. Sorry we lost your call there. And if you want to join the program and you're listening now, we've got Mike DiGiorgio, a film critic and the executive producer of 13 WHAM News This Morning, Shai Lewis, 211 Lifeline Program Manager here, talking about suicide prevention. The number to call our program is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. It's toll-free. We're right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Shai, if they call 211, what do they find?
If you call 211, you will reach a trained telecounselor, is what we call our staff. And they're there to listen, to provide support, to help people explore options. So it is a good place to call in the community if you're not sure where to call, if you're not sure who to talk to, if you're feeling really alone, you're feeling maybe you've reached out to family or friends and they weren't getting it or connecting, or you're still worried that you might be a burden, which is probably not true, but we want to be there for you. And you can dial that number anytime, 24 hours a day. You can also reach us at our original Lifeline number at 275-5151. And you can also reach us through instant messaging from the hotline is 24/7. So, but you can instant message us at our website at 211lifeline.org from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. So there's a lot of ways to connect, which is also really important. If you're afraid to talk on the phone, come an instant message. And there's someone there who cares, who wants to help, and who can help you sort through what's going on.
I have a friend who said today, look at the way everyone loved Robin Williams. And if only he could have known the way the world would react. If he would have known somehow just how beloved he was, would that have changed the outcome? And again, Shai is not here to be able to answer that perfectly. But in general, when people say, if only they knew how loved they were, how much this would hurt other people, is that a motivating factor, or is it sort of insulated from that, Shai?
Oftentimes when people start to think about suicide and that becomes a primary thought that they're having, it gets real black and white and it's hard to see that. He may have known. I know other people who have attempted suicide and lived who also have known, you know, that they were loved, but they can't see past that. The darkness is really strong. The depression is a big liar, and it tells you a lot of lies about how things will be better, how things might change, how other people's lives might be improved. And it's always there whispering in your ear things that just aren't true, and it's hard to fight them.
Let's grab back to the phones. We'll grab Mary in Rochester. Mary, you're on with Mike DiGiorgio and Shai Lewis. Thanks for calling Connections.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, Mary.
My late father dated Robin Williams' mother, and I remember him talking about his mother and how sort of candid she was about her sexuality when he was growing up. But also, I just wonder if his Jewishness didn't have something to do with his depression, because the world situation right now is, I'm not Jewish, but I think, you know, I think about my Jewish friends and what a struggle it must be for them with going on in the world. And I'll take my answer out here.
Thanks for the call, Mary. I don't know how to answer that. Shai?
Suicide, it crosses every age, every socioeconomic category, every ethnic background. Suicide doesn't know a lot of boundaries. Depression, certainly there are some categories that we look at. Folks who are elderly are more likely to complete suicide. Men are more likely to complete suicide. Women are 3 times more likely to attempt suicide. There's a lot of different risk groups that we can look at when we're talking about prevention and trying to send some messages about seeking help earlier as you're struggling with depression or other things. So we try to target our messages to youth, try to target messages to people who are elderly. So we look at those groups and those statistics when we are looking at our prevention messaging and how to reach people who might be vulnerable. But when it comes to deaths by suicide, there is no boundaries. It could be anyone. Anybody could be thinking about suicide. And we want to make sure that we aren't only thinking about people in groups in terms of making sure to reach out to someone who might be struggling.
We have a listener who writes and wants to know if our guest can comment on Robin Williams' most recent television show, The Crazy People. And it was only on CBS
Crazy Ones.
The Crazy Ones.
With Sarah Michelle Gellar. And I never got around to it, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, and that was only on for a season before it got canceled. Did you see it a little bit, Shai?
I watched it. I was a big Buffy the Vampire fan, as well as a fan of Robin Williams, so I definitely tuned into the show and I watched it.
Did
it
you was, enjoy seeing him on television again?
It was nice to have a weekly check-in, and I really liked at the end they would show all the outtakes of different things that hadn't succeeded or made it to the show, but that were Robin Williams cracking everybody up.
Oh, great. Oh,
I didn't know that they did that. Did you know that, Mike?
No, that would be great to see.
Yeah, now I kind of want to go back and see that.
Evan, it's funny, as I think about him late in his career, and this is me projecting, and it's why it's hard as a fan to think about this guy taking his life. You think of this 63-year-old elder statesman almost. In my mind, he wasn't the big box office draw, maybe he was, because now he was back on TV, but he was this guy who they knew they could rely on to be funny and just appear in all these different places. He's doing cameos. He's playing Teddy Roosevelt in Night at the Museum. He can do a sitcom. He's voices in different cartoons. And as a fan, you think this is a guy who's got it together at 63 years old. This is a reliable guy for what we need to be funny.
There was a director who, I don't remember the name, and I was reading a profile in the New York Times this morning. And the director said that that Robin Williams was viewed with respect for those reasons, but a lot of people still thought that he had his Lost in Translation coming.
And by that they mean, what would they mean by that, Mike?
Is they're referring to the Bill Murray movie, probably, where Bill Murray suddenly was taken serious as an actor. I think Robin Williams got there. He was nominated for an Academy Award 4 times. He won one.
So he didn't have to worry about getting a Lost in Translation moment. He was taken seriously. He was a serious actor.
I think so.
Yeah, from probably from his 30s forward, as opposed to Bill Murray sort of transitioning, fair to say.
Yeah, because you think of Bill Murray in Saturday Night Live and skits and maybe things a little more silly. Robin Williams sooner got out of TV and into big picture roles.
All right, let's wrap the conversation at a couple of very different points. Mike, I'll start with you as the critic. The legacy of Robin Williams is?
That funny, manic comedian with a heart. These movies that everybody's remembering now. You looked on social media last night and everybody was saying, boy, I got to watch Dead Poets Society now. Boy, I got to watch Awakenings. Boy, I've got to watch... That there was this endless list of them. And it's not a one-hit wonder. We've got a
Good
variety
morning,
of roles going
Doubtfire.
Over some generations, absolutely, that people are going to take comfort in as soon as they're comfortable watching them again.
And Shai Lewis, 211 Lifeline Program Manager, what's the takeaway as we talk about a very difficult subject from the loss of Robin Williams?
I think the takeaway is to, one, reach out to people who you might be concerned about, who might be struggling with something, and try to be there. If you're a person who is struggling, try to break through the difficulties of the fear and the stigma and reach out to someone to talk to. You can contact our hotline. If you're outside of our area, you can contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-TALK. I'd also like to think that this discussion at this larger level, regardless of the specifics of Robin Williams' death, so I'd like to think that we can begin a better dialogue about the stigma associated with mental health, helping people to be more willing to talk about it, maybe some systems change, and including the voices of people who have struggled with thoughts of suicide in our conversations as we move forward.
If you've had thoughts of suicide, Shai told us earlier, one in 20 people do.
Our best guesstimate, so based on research.
But that is far more than most people would have guessed. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing to keep in mind, that you're not alone. And that out of this tragedy, hopefully we talk more about it and more lives are saved. Shai, thank you for sharing your expertise. And again, Suicide Prevention Awareness Week is next month.
Mm-hmm, September 8th through 14th.
Okay, well, we're going to come back and talk about that in an extended fashion. And so we'll see you soon. And thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Mike DiGiorgio, always good to get your perspective and great stuff on the career of Robin Williams.
Nanu nanu.
Nanu nanu. Good way to sign off the program. Nanu nanu to all of you. And Dave Campo, our engineer behind the glass, thank you. Have a great afternoon.